Hello, this is Janet Michael. In addition to hosting The Valley today each weekday at noon on the River 95.3, I also produce podcasts, and I'm excited to kick off season two of our podcast series in partnership with Rappahannock Electric Cooperative called We Are REC. Every month, we'll release a new episode talking to different people from REC about a host of different topics. We'll get tips for saving money on your electric bill. We'll talk about renewable energy and the impact it can have in our communities. We'll get some behind-the-scenes info about what happens when the power goes out in a storm. Don't miss out on information about community grants, scholarships, REC-hosted events, and more. Get every single episode on our website at theriver953.com under the podcast tab, or you can subscribe for free in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, just search for We Are REC. We are having a conversation today with David Kugler. He is the Senior Vice President of Member Services and External Affairs for Rappahannock Electric Cooperative. David, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day to have a quick conversation with me. I appreciate it.
Hello, Janet. Thanks for the invitation to join your program today. Look forward to conversation.
I'm looking forward to it. I have to admit a little bit more now. During the pre-show, we were chatting a little bit and I found out that you're a Shenandoah Valley guy. So I always love talking to a local.
Oh, yes, yes. I grew up in Augusta County, just a couple hours south of the Winchester Front Royal area, and still consider myself a Valley boy. Family's still there and we call that home. I guess when people grow up and move away to different places, they still call where their roots are their home. So the Valley is my home and always will be.
And if you got to pick somewhere, you couldn't have picked a prettier place.
Absolutely. I agree 100%.
So tell me, what does the Senior VP of Member Services and External Affairs do?
Okay. Sounds like a complicated title.
So it
I'll break it down into some pieces. Member services for an electric co-op, we are owned by our members. So our customers are our members. So it's everything you would think of in a customer service area. It's from our call center. We have local government affairs or local community affairs. I guess we have people in the what we call Blue Ridge, the Front Royal area, that interact with the chambers and the local government officials. We do billing and collections and all the things that you would typically think of, like energy efficiency, working with our members on a day-to-day basis for billing and collections and meter reading and things like that. On the external affairs side, that's a little broader, and it includes in Virginia, and your listeners may not be aware of this, but electric co-ops are just like the larger electric companies, like a Dominion or an Appalachian Power, or we used to have Atomic Edison, Allegheny Power. They were all regulated by the State Corporation Commission. And the co-ops in Virginia, there are 12 of us, and we're the largest. We're regulated by the State Corporation Commission. So that comes under my authority, as all of our rates and the regulations we operate under and our terms and conditions are set by the State Utility Commission, a third-party state agency. On the government or legislative affairs side, also comes under external affairs. And we'll talk more about that in detail, I think. But obviously, we have a lot of elected officials at the state and federal level, over 30 delegates, senators at the state level, and then we have our U.S. Senators and congressmen, and we have a lot of service area, covers a lot of the state, 22 counties that we cover. So we have a lot of legislators that we keep in contact with and communicate with and hope they'll support the co-op causes when they come in front of the legislature or Congress. And then the other area that I have oversight is economic development. And we have a new staff person who's spending a lot of time. She's been working quite a bit up in your area. There's a lot of new businesses that are looking at your area. So we want to engage with them and the local governments to help bring new jobs and opportunities to the area. And lastly, communications falls under external affairs. So we have a very talented, small but very talented team that does everything from our Cooperative Living magazine, if you've seen that, mm-hmm. to our website, to even working with the local media, you know, like the Winchester Star and other publications, putting out news releases and things like that. So they're very busy, small but very busy group of folks communicating internally and externally with members and employees.
And I never would have really thought about the government or the legislative end of it as just a regular member. All I'm thinking of is that you're a company that gives me the power. You help me turn the lights on and keep the house warm or keep the house cool. I never thought of all of the other things that go into you being able to provide that service.
That's right. We operate under laws and regulations. Like I say, we have a utility commission that kind of administers that, but it all starts with the legislature, the General Assembly. when they're in session or even when they're not in session, they're interested in making sure we have good energy policy in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And they look for our input and insight on that. And we get a chance to provide what works for us, what's problematic, what can make our business run more efficiently. Sometimes ideas will come from out of nowhere, and there's a big movement toward renewable energy in the Commonwealth. And we very much support that, but we want to make sure the policies are correct and feasible. So when you implement them from a business side, it doesn't drive up the cost for our members, right? We want to do this thoughtfully and efficiently.
So you really have to stay on top of any new bills that may be coming down the pike, or even if there is a rumor out there that XYZ senator or congressman or congresswoman are thinking of doing something, so that you can reach out and understand and maybe give them some background and some explanation for the fallout or positive things that may happen from any legislation.
That's absolutely correct. And we do that ourselves for REC, but we also work with the other 11 electric co-ops in Virginia. So we have a co-op association that sort of facilitates this as a group. So they'll keep their eye out. We'll watch for bills, or we'll support a bill that looks like it could be beneficial to our membership. But a lot of times there was a bill that surfaced in the General Assembly earlier this year that we understood was being supported by some larger businesses, a lot of those that do online business. And it had to do with privacy of data. And conceptually, that makes perfect sense. You want to protect the consumer's data. We got a no end to protect our members' data that we have on file. But this was problematic for us, this particular bill, the way it was crafted. So working with legislators, we got them to understand we're doing everything necessary to protect our members' personal information. But that bill would have made it much more difficult for us to operate, much more costly, and really wouldn't have benefited in our sector. So there was some exceptions, and the electric utility sector was sort of carved out of that once the bill patrons understood, okay, we don't really need this for the electric utilities. We need it for some other businesses. So some of it is education and awareness and a little bit of negotiation. And so the bill passed, but it did not directly apply to us. So that was beneficial from that standpoint. So that was just an example of something that surfaced that we were not expecting, but it got on our radar, and we had to work with the patron and other parties to say, okay, let's find a solution here that works for everybody.
And I would imagine too, you mentioned a minute ago about all of the new business that's coming to the area. It's a lot of diverse businesses. I talk on a regular basis to a lot of the EDA directors and call centers and all of these large industries and factories coming in. But the Shenandoah Valley is also very agriculture oriented. So you kind of got to know a little bit about all of these different types of businesses in order to make sure you're covering for them as well, I would think.
That's correct. Yeah. So as you know, with the interstate corridors, 66 and 81, the intersection there in the area, and the inland port, there's so many goods being transported overseas that find their way into containers that come up to that area. And then there's lots of distribution centers. So that is huge. We serve a number of those. And then you have manufacturers, as you said, call centers, and even government agencies are looking at locations and have built in that area in recent years. And I'm not sure what's going with agriculture. We're moving away from traditional, let's just plant crops out in a field. Let's do this year-round farm. Sort of indoor farming. And I know there's been some proposals to build some facilities like that. So we do have a staff that tries to stay knowledgeable in the different industries, and we want to accommodate their needs. So for a new business, it's two things from a utility. They want reliable service, and they want it to be affordable. And now there's another piece to the affordability is a lot of businesses want it to be green, or they want it to be renewable. They want to have a renewable attribute that it's sourced from renewable energy sources. That's a key part now that has started to emerge and becoming a bigger and bigger component.
You guys are all in on the sustainability aspect of it, from the solar farms to battery powered things to the electric vehicles. You're really always thinking one step ahead to make sure you're already there when any of these things become a thing.
That's exactly right. We've tried to stay ahead of the curve a little bit on where the technology and where our members want us to go. 2019, the Virginia General Assembly passed the Virginia Clean Economy Act that required a lot of things from electric utilities. But for the most part, it didn't apply to the electric cooperatives because our legislators recognized we were sort of ahead of the curve. Didn't have to mandate these things for the electric co-ops because we were already doing them or already planning to do them, which was nice. And even things from the new administration in the White House, you know, they've got to focus on clean energy and renewable energy. And again, Virginia is sort of ahead of the curve of most states in the country now. So I think anything they do at the federal level is not going to have a huge impact at the Virginia level because we're already moving ahead on that. I have a personal interest in electric vehicles. Maybe we can talk a little more about that, but that's something I've long had an interest in. I've always been kind of a car guy, and then to have that intersect with electric utility. And now we're looking at a future where folks are not going to be having to wait in lines at the gas station to get their fuel for their vehicle. They're going to be able to get their fuel at home from REC and just plug in and charge overnight, and you're good to go the next day.
I have been fascinated with these electric vehicles pretty much since the beginning. And early on in this podcast series, and I'm going to forget her name now, I spoke with someone about electric vehicles and I had no idea how they worked. I was very clueless. I just thought it was a really cool concept. And I remember one of the first questions that I asked her, this is what taught me to start doing a little more research before I have conversations with people, is I said, so if I buy one of these things at a dealership, do I bring it home and just plug it into an outlet? And she's like, oh, no. So right. She explained all of that stuff to me. Talk to me about electric vehicles, because they have really come a long way and are much more mainstream now.
Yes. And I think Tesla came about and sort of changed the industry. They were not a player in the automotive industry, but they've sort of changed the dynamic. And now everybody's all in, from Ford to General Motors, that said they will not build a gasoline or diesel powered engine after 2035. So you're talking, it's a little more than 10 years, maybe 14 years now from now, you will not be able to buy an internal combustion engine vehicle from General Motors. And Ford has not made that kind of commitment, but they've made a commitment with their two most iconic brands. The Mustang, which my wife and I just bought an electric Mustang a few months ago.
So really?
You're getting the true experience now of owning an electric vehicle and what's different and what's cool about that. And then Ford, they're going to introduce their F-150, which is their best-selling brand. It's been the best-selling vehicle in America for decades. They're going to have an all-electric Ford F-150. They're calling it the Lightning, which is a cool name for an electric vehicle. So these kind of vehicles will start to change the marketplace. Now they'll be more mainstream. It's not just a sort of a niche. I think you're going to see people adopting these and wanting these. The technology is just amazing. It's sort of like driving a smartphone. All the capabilities you have unleashed with your smartphone, it's kind of that way. And from a utility standpoint, this is great because we will be able to fuel the cars, but we can do it at night when we have extra capacity. Our load is not as high. So the main thing we need to do is get people to charge it at the appropriate time. We don't want to add load on top of late afternoon on a summer when our load is really, really high. We prefer they wait till the evening and do it overnight. Like you plug in your phone at night or your iPad or something and charge it overnight when you're sleeping. That's the way your car will be.
You mentioned the bigger car dealers, even some of the small, I say smaller ones, Volvo's not really a smaller one, but I thought I read somewhere that Volvo, even in the late 2020 somethings, like 2028, 2025, they may be transitioned over completely to all electric or at least all hybrid or electric models.
Right. Yep. Volvo's moving that way. And Volkswagen, if you remember, there was a scandal. They were a cheating scandal around emissions. So they turned the corner and have gone all electric is their future too. So it's going to be difficult to find a vehicle that's not battery powered in the not too distant future. It will have a lot of years where you'll have gasoline engines, you know, cars last 15 or 20 years now, for the most part, if you maintain them well. So it'll be a long transition. But from our standpoint, we see that as beneficial to our members. We want to work with them. The biggest challenge I had when we bought our car was what you described. I knew when I brought it home, I couldn't just plug it in a 120 volt outlet and charge it up. I knew I needed something else at home. And I didn't want to spend a ton of money, but I finally found online myself. I couldn't find anybody really to help me with. The local car dealers really don't know. They don't have experience with this. So I needed to wire up a 240 volt circuit. I have a garage. We put the car in. So it's just like your dryer or your range. It needs that amount of capacity. The car came with a portable charger and we're good to go. So I just had to get an extra circuit run, a 240 volt circuit. It was as simple as that. We're working toward having some expertise internally now as our members start looking at electric vehicle. Maybe Ford or Chevy dealer doesn't know enough about to tell them what they need to do at home, but we can tell them because we're going to be their fuel source in the future.
Right? And that was part of that conversation, actually, that I had. The other piece of it was if I get one and get the charging station in my house and then suddenly three or four of my neighbors realize, wow, I want one too. Right. There needs to be some communication back to REC because you have to do some things on your end if suddenly seven of us on one block decide we're all going electric vehicle.
To that point, we have pending in front of our state utility commission a pilot program to get a couple of hundred of our members with electric vehicles to sign up for the pilot. And we'd like to understand their charging behavior, what brought them to buy an EV. But more importantly, we're going to offer an incentive for them to charge at night, off peak, when it's optimal for us, and they should be indifferent. If they get home at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock from work and they plug their car in, it doesn't have to start charging right then. It's better And the way our car works, and I think every one of these electric cars, you just set a timer on it and have it come on later in the evening at 9 o'clock, and it'll charge and it'll be fully charged when you're ready to leave the next morning. So that's the goal, is to provide a financial incentive. You can save a little money. It's already cheaper to drive with electricity than gasoline, just straight up price at the pump versus the price of electricity is already savings, but you can save a little more if you respond to an incentive to charge off peak. For example, our pilot that we proposed to the commission offers a $7 a month incentive off of your electric bill if you'll just program it to charge at night instead of during the day at random times when you plug in.
The amount of time that you save as well. The one thing that I hate more than anything else on this planet is stopping to get gas. It, to me, is like the biggest waste of time. I'm one of those people that always has to be moving, always have to be doing something. Right. And those 10 or 15 minutes standing there, just watching the numbers tick by at the gas pump are the most annoying thing for me ever. I can do this now while I'm sleeping and not even give it a thought and be ready to go the next morning.
And if you need to travel, the statistics show so far that when folks get an electric car or truck, 70 to 80% of the charging will be at home. Sometimes you need to make a trip that's longer. Our car will go almost 300 miles on a charge. But if you need to travel further than that, so we've made one trip home since we've had the vehicle for 3 months. We went to the Valley to visit my mom and our father-in-law. It's a little further than we could make on a round trip. So we stopped at a Walmart near Stanton, which has a supercharger, and topped off while we went in and picked up a few things in the store. We came back out and the car was ready to go and got us back home. So there's going to be public charging stations too, in addition to charging at home. And I think there's quite a few of those being built on the 81 corridor, from what I understand. So you're starting to see those in different locations.
Do you have all of this information or information about electric vehicles on the Rappahannock Electric website?
We do. There's a tremendous amount of information there. And there's actually a platform. It's called Choose EV that we use. I think this is one of the best in the country. So anybody that's thinking about an electric vehicle, you can look at all the brands and the different options they have and their battery capacity and range. And you can compare that to a gasoline engine and it'll tell you what your savings would be. Typically, electric cars cost a little more on the front end, although there is federal rebates available for some of the models now to help bring down the initial cost. But then the maintenance costs and the operating costs is so much less over the life of the vehicle. It works out to be a lot less costly. We've got a very good tool on our website for any of our members or anybody. It's available to anybody. Your listeners that may not be an REC member can go check that out too.
And again, that goes back to the importance of having a solid line of communication to our legislators, because this is just another piece of things that you need to stay on top of.
There was a bill passed by the General Assembly this year. I think I should call it a study bill. It didn't do anything right now, but it directed the State Utility Commission to do an extensive study of policies around they call it transportation electrification. So this is not just personal vehicles, but trucking and everything, to take a hard look at all of our policies that we have and laws and regulations that we have around transportation. And if we're moving toward electrification, what needs to change? So our regulators are reporting back to the General Assembly and the governor by May 1st of 2022. So just under a year from now, there will be in a report. And my guess is they will have a lot of chance for folks to have input. So this is one we want to keep an eye on and have input. And I think it will be constructive. Ultimately, hope they'll come up with a checklist. Okay, this, and this probably needs to change as we move our transportation system away from fossil fuels toward electrification.
And that makes sense too, because as you mentioned, you just got the electric Mustang. Amazon is going towards all electric delivery vehicles. This really does run the spectrum of just Joe Smith in his garage for his one or two vehicles somebody the size of Amazon with a fleet of the size they must have.
Yeah, there's a new company that doesn't yet have a vehicle on the road called Rivian, and they've been under development for a number of years. Amazon made a huge capital investment in them. Even Ford made an investment. So they're building an SUV and a pickup truck for average consumers, but they're also under contract with Amazon to build like 100,000 of these delivery vans, all electric. And they're going to start rolling those out, I think, in the next year. And then FedEx and UPS are looking at electric delivery vehicles. And then you go up the chain. We talked about the distribution warehouses, lots of those distribution facilities in the corridor there between Front Royal and Winchester. A lot of these are grocery and other types of deliveries where a truck goes out early in the morning and they're dropping off everything from potato chips and milk and bread to whatever. And they'll make a day-long trip and they drop off at lots of places. They're moving to electrification of those now. That's cost-effective to have those big one-day delivery trucks leave in the morning, come back, they charge at night, they're ready to go the next day, fully powered. And then the next increment is the tractor trailers, the huge semis. And there's already lots of tests going on with that. But all of our truck stops that we see along Interstate 81, for example, will at some point be And that's a lot of power when you're wanting to recharge an 18-wheeler with enough juice to run for a day or whatever.
Do you get feedback from members and even friends and family that are like, hey, explain this right to me? Have you become the guy?
We have a staff that keeps track of this, and I try to keep aware of the bigger issues and keep it in our board aware. We have legislative day in January, and there's always a few hot button issues that we make sure our board members are aware of when we do legislative visits. But yeah, I think the fact that we have to kind of keep our finger on the pulse of this and help to try to influence it, or certainly be aware of what's going on and have input where appropriate. But there's probably some folks that this is completely off their radar. It's all about flipping the switch and the lights come on and the yellow trucks going down the road. And that's really the way they see us. And I think a lot of businesses have to be aware of kind of this. I'll give you an example of a bill that came through this year, and the co-ops all supported and REC did. It had to do with wineries and breweries and cideries and distilleries. And there's quite a few of those starting to crop up. A lot in the Commonwealth of Virginia, a lot in our service area, and I know some in the Northern Valley. And they wanted to have an opportunity to do renewable and put solar at their facility and embrace new green technology. But there was a barrier to that in the state law and some of the regulations. So with a little fairly minor modification to the law, it kind of opened the door for them to do it. It was meaningful and effective because a lot of their consumers that come in to buy their products like them to be green. So again, that was something that sort of surfaced in another industry, the beverage industry, I guess, and sort of the local grassroots businesses that fit nicely. And we could help accommodate that and support that, help them with their future energy needs and making sure that it was sustainable like they desired to do. And that one sort of came out of nowhere, and we weren't that aware of it. But once we found out about it, I said, that makes perfect sense, and we can get behind that and support it. And we have a number of facilities like that we serve.
And that's a perfect example of, no matter what your business industry is, or even the size of your business, while it gets very difficult sometimes to look outside of running that business and growing right. that business, you really right. still do have to have some sense of that 40,000 foot level and what's going right. on from a state perspective and from the federal perspective.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. The whole pandemic is shining a bright light on that, because we've had mandates or regulations have been imposed that sometimes don't seem logical. It impacts certain businesses more than others. Some businesses have thrived over the last year, and others have been sort of hamstrung, and they've just kind of been hanging on. And we try to work with businesses in every way we can, because we want everybody to be successful. Our business, and you've probably heard from some of the staff folks at REC, we've kept everything running, and it's pretty amazing. I never would have thought I could work from home, from a home office for 14 months and run my part of the business. But it's work.
David, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day to have a conversation with me. I've learned all kinds of cool stuff. I appreciate it.
Well, good. I've enjoyed our conversation. Check out our website. We have a brand new website that's really robust and has tons of information. Or call our office. The toll-free number is right there on the website. And give us a call. We can talk in more detail about any of these topics with our members who are interested.